This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You are on Saturday Magazine. It's Saturday, the 21st of June, which makes me think it's the winter solstice today, Macca. Yeah, winter. Yeah, it's halfway through, so the days are going to get lighter and longer, which is a great introduction
to... How much lighter and how much longer?
Well, I don't know. It's going to be like seconds per day, maybe
minutes. I don't
know.
Our next guest...
We'll do some research on
that. He knows lots of stuff. Richard Keane is the CEO of Living Positive Victoria. Winter solstice, Richard. How much longer do the days get and how much lighter do they get?
Well, I've been in Canberra this week, so it's been very, very cold, and any extra light, any extra heat is more than welcome.
Exactly. Now, you've actually been on a bit of a road trip, you know, with NAPWA, the National Association of People with AIDS. I know a lot of matters had been discussed, but I assume one of them was some of the reform in the aged care system and how that impacts. Tell us about that.
Yeah, thanks so much. I got to go with NAPWA to the National Aged Care Alliance meeting, which brings together consumer groups, aged care providers, the aged care workforce and health professionals, all in to discuss the reforms in the aged care sector. They were due to come in on the 1st of July. They've now been delayed until November the 1st, which is a bit of a relief because in the meeting, I think there was an undercurrent of we're just not ready to kind of move yet. These changes are really, really significant and really it's about putting decision-making firmly in the hands of the clients or the older person engaged in aged care. And whether that's aged care in the home, residential care, right across the board, it's a massive shift. And I guess it kind of comes from the same framework as NDIS after the Disability Royal Commission. However, they've learned a lot of lessons from NDIS, particularly about, you know, a few rogue traders in that area and other things like that. So, yeah, we've got a lot of change coming down our way for older Australians.
So what are the issues that came out of that discussion or that you raised, Richard? I mean, most of us...
So for us, it was about some of the advocacy that we do in that space already. And some examples I can provide you, Macca, is we recently had a member reach out to us who was going in for residential care here in Melbourne and was refused a place because of their HIV status. And I think the manager of the facility just had a little bit of a panic attack, hadn't had anything to do with HIV, was panicking about any potential risks and other things like that. And really quite unnecessarily, HIV is now a chronic manageable illness. And if people are adherent to their medications, there's zero risk of transmission in those spaces. So the lack of knowledge around people living with HIV in the aged care sector is pretty big. And it's part of the reason that we thought rather than kind of complaining from the outside, we'd try and get in and talk to all of these major players.
That's a really great idea, Richard. I think, you know, it's not great that people are still concerned about HIV and the possible infection risk, but, you know, to have people who've been living with HIV getting into aged care facilities, I think, you know, it's a bittersweet moment because people never thought that would actually happen. But I think you're right, getting in there and just doing that education process, it's almost like a secondary re-education to people about HIV and how much progress has been made in managing that infection.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't probably need to, Macca will know that, you know, 30, 35 years ago, we never thought we'd be discussing these issues. However, our Living Positive Victoria supports people over the entirety of their lifetime in living with HIV. And the median age of people living with HIV by 2030, 70% of us will be over 50. And I just think stepping into this space at the moment, part of that is about the success we've had too with our HIV response here, that the median age of people living with HIV is increasing. But that brings on a whole range of new challenges, new stigma and discrimination that we kind of have to address in those settings, because it is a novel and new kind of thing for that community to be dealing with. So in some ways it feels like we've got our work cut out for us, but going to these major meetings, building up alliances, getting ourselves out there really does help us in our advocacy efforts.
And you're right. I mean, who would have thought all those years ago that there'd be a need for advocacy in the aged care area, and particularly in residential aged care? Not to say that there weren't people then of an age that were going in.
And Richard, before we just jump to our next topic briefly, just for people who don't know, what does it mean when you go to Canberra and get involved in those meetings? Just give us a quick outline of what actually happens, because people would not understand that process.
So stepping into a space like that, really it's about most of the time listening and learning and just finding that right time, kind of not being on the front foot and kind of going in there with a list of things, but finding the right space to come in and add value into those discussions from your lived experience perspective is the goal of those situations. And you can get a lot of things achieved. I linked up with some gerontologists who take care of older and more frail people.
Oh, say that
We're
again.
Talking about gerontologists.
Well done.
Who take care of old and aging people, and building those networks and potential research into HIV and aging opportunities into the future, so we've got some data and science behind the lived experience that we advocate on behalf of. I think there's great opportunities for us in linking into those big, larger networks.
Yeah. So tell us, Richard, what's the plan then if we want to try and get better education about people moving into aged care with undetectable status? How do we actually move that conversation forward?
I think it goes on to the second subject for the morning, which is the guidance on what undetectable is by ASHM, who's the Australian Society of HIV and Hepatitis Medicine. We had a big meeting yesterday in Sydney about updating the government's advice on undetectable. And I think one of the challenges has been that in the last 12 months, the World Health Organization said that anything below 1,000 parts per million is undetectable. Australia has 200, which is considered undetectable, with zero risk of transmission to your sexual partners. But the sensitivity of our testing treatment now measures down to under 20. So, for example, I've been undetectable for a long period of time. Originally, they would measure under 50 parts per million would be undetectable. Now, with advances in the treatment and the testing of viral load, it's down to under 20, and it's causing some confusion. A lot of positive folks now don't go to high caseload clinics. They go to a GP with maybe only one or two people living with HIV on their books. That information isn't getting down to there. So we've got some doctors who are doing things like, if someone's returned a viral load of 60, they're telling them things like, you're potentially infectious. And we have one person who was told to cancel their holiday and go home, when really it's under 200, there's zero risk of transmission. Occasionally, positive people will have something called a viral blip, which means that they might have been under 20 for a whole series of tests, but they've had a blip up to 60 or up to 70. That's often caused by a range of things, like if you've had COVID, for example, you can get a small viral blip in your test if it's been recent. If you've got a sexually transmitted infection that you've been dealing with recently, that can also cause a viral blip, along with things like using antacids and some vitamin supplements and other things like that can also cause, because of the sensitivity of the machines that we do the testing with, can cause those blips. And it causes a lot of stress for positive people, particularly if they've been undetectable for a long time and all of a sudden they get a test result where there's a tiny blip. And all of a sudden there just seems to be some confusion. And last year at the international conference in Montreal, our Australian government signed up to the UEQ declaration globally. And this is about just holding them to account and getting government rather than community to send out the information about what is undetectable. Yeah.
I could call me naive, but surely if you're a GP, there must be some sort of database you can go to on, you know, a whole range of topics just to be able to say, actually, where do I get the most up-to-date information on...
It's called general practice.
Yeah.
And
am I being really naive,
well,
Richard?
Well, no, I don't think you are, Paul. I mean, the reality is, you know, that doctors have to be across a whole range of information.
They sure do.
And, you know, a doctor that... you know, that does specialise or does have good knowledge, particularly of sexually transmitted diseases and, you know, HIV. You know, if you actually go to a lot of GPs and you ask them even about monkeypox, they'll look at you like you're mad.
Yeah.
They have no idea. You know, the reality that, you know, in Australia or in Victoria, in Melbourne, you can actually go to the chemist, the pharmacist, for at least for the next 10 days, because I think it ends at the end of June, but get a free monkeypox vaccination. Now, other countries in the world, for example, in Singapore, it's $180. Like,
yes, absolutely.
Singapore dollars.
Go, Richard.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Macca. In low caseload settings, a GP may only have one or two HIV positive patients. 98% of their time is spent with other chronic manageable illnesses like diabetes, hypertension, a whole range of other issues that impact positive people and the general public, and so their knowledge isn't as high as it could be, and they often talk about their being time poor, about being able to pick up this information. So we want the government to be delivering this information to medical practitioners.
Yeah.
So there's just a general understanding and a guideline, because sometimes if it comes from community, they kind of, you know, not all, but on occasion they go, well, of course you'd say that. You know what I mean? And they're concerned about risk. But I just want to remind all of our listeners that our work and advocacy, there is zero risk for anyone under 200. And, I think we just need to reinforce that and have government lead that conversation in a broader community dialogue.
Richard, thank you so much for your great work. I'm glad that the trip to Canberra has been successful. Thank you for joining us. For those just joining, Richard's been travelling this morning and he still manages to get on air.
He still manages
to. So thank you so much, Richard. We really do appreciate it.
So
thanks for the time.
Pleasure. You are listening to Saturday Magazine. I'm Macca. Paul is also with me and he's also panelling. Stay with us. When we come up, we're going to speak with Peter Khalil, federal member for Wills. I nearly called him Peter Wills, federal member for Khalil.
Oh, dear.
And he's actually, I think he's assistant minister for defence or something like that. We'll ask him about the South China Sea as well. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.